Welcome to this podcast on Keats's sonnet, When I Have Fears That I May Cease to Be. I'm going to read it and then talk about some of its themes and then look at some of the devices that Keats has used in order to convey those themes. So firstly, the sonnet itself. When I have fears that I may cease to be, before my pen has gleaned my teeming brain, before high-piled books in charactery hold like rich garners the full ripened grain, when I behold upon the night's starred face huge cloudy symbols of a high romance, and think that I may never live to trace their shadows with the magic hand of chance, and when I feel, fair creature of an hour, that I shall never look upon thee more, never have relish in the fairy power of unreflecting love, then on the shore of the wide world I stand alone, and think till love and fame to nothingness do sink. This sonnet is a Shakespearean sonnet, which means that its rhyme scheme is A, B, A, B, C, D, C, D, E, F, E, F, G, G. And before you go any further, you should probably compare that rhyme scheme with the other sonnets by Keats that you've read, which have what we call a Petrarchan rhyme scheme, which is different. And what we see immediately then is Keats experimenting with different rhyme schemes as he struggles to find his poetic voice. Remember, Keats wanted to be a great poet. He said he wanted to be among the English poets after his death. And so all the time when we read him, we have to be aware of his desire to experiment as well as his desire to communicate ideas. So what do we have in this sonnet? Well, the first thing to notice is that it's a single sentence. Absolutely fantastic. A single sentence means it's a single idea. And so although there seems to be some complexity to the idea, everything in the sonnet is connected. Everything in Keats's mind is connected to one central concept. Notice the repetition at the beginning of line 1 and line 5, when I have fears, is followed by when I behold. And that tension is followed up in line 9 with and when I feel, fair creature of an hour. So we move from fears to what he looks at to what he feels. The second thing that we notice immediately is the way in which the language changes. The complex words at the beginning of the sonnet, the teeming, the high-piled books in charactery, the rich garners, the high romance, night-starred face, become something incredibly simple by the last 2.5 lines. Then on the shore of the wide world, I stand alone and think, till love and fame to nothingness do sink. Apart from the word nothingness, it's all really one-syllable words. Okay, alone has two, but then on the shore of the wide world I stand, all single syllable, and think to love and fame, and so on. Single syllables. It couldn't be simpler. And so something's happened during the course of the sonnet, as he's moved from complexity to simplicity. What is it exactly that Keats is writing about here? Well, the clue's in the first line. When I have fears that I may cease to be before, he's done a whole series of things. So it's the fearing of death, although not quite of death, because it's just ceasing to be. So he fears that dissipation on death. Keats was an atheist. He didn't believe in an afterlife. So when I have fears that I may cease to be, before he's done what he wants to do, and look at what it is that he wants to do. He has a teeming brain, a brain full of ideas that he wants to get down on paper. His pen needs to glean these ideas. Gleaning is a word that refers to the picking up of very tiny pieces of wheat after the crop has been harvested. He's trying to find these tiny ideas and particularize them and turn them into poetry before he dies. He wants books, charactery is handwriting, he wants books in charactery to hold the full ripened grain of his ideas. There's a very strong sense in this poem that he knows he's going to be a great poet and that he wants to get it down on paper. He also imagines not just the book that he's writing, but he looks more widely. He thinks of the night and its stars and the cloudy symbols of a high romance. There's a merging then of the external world, the night's starred face, with the symbols of a high romance. A romance is a story. And what he's going to try to do is to trace the shadows of those symbols with the magic hand of chance. And it's worth just stopping for a moment and having a look at the number of words there that are to do with meaning, but not words. So we have symbols, we have shadows, we have the magic hand of chance. There's a sense, really, that he's going to try to describe something that cannot easily be put into words. But because it's Keats, we come in the end to the heart of the matter. And when I feel, fair creature of an hour. This is a poem written to a woman. It's about love. And then shall I never look upon thee more. So the poem's moved at the very beginning. It's about himself. When I have fears that I may cease before my pen, my teeming brain. And now, by line 9, it's about somebody else. So the first 8 lines, what we call the octet, is about himself. But the second 6 lines, the sestet, is about something different. This is quite normal, and it's a kind of Shakespearean device that the focus shifts in the second part of the sonnet. It shifts again, incidentally, in the last 2 lines. So this final 6 lines is about something else. He's looking outwards, he's looking at the woman he loves, and he's thinking that he's never going to have relish in the fairy power of unreflecting love. The word unreflecting is terribly important for Keats, to understand Keats, because he's interested in precisely the realm of the intuition, the instinct, the natural movement of the mind. So love for him is unreflecting. He doesn't stop to consider it or think about it or analyze it or be scientific about it. The truth for Keats is in the lack of reflection, the intuitive grasp of love. And he feels that if he can't have these things, if he can't write, if he can't dream, if he can't be in love, then on the shore of the wide world I stand alone and think till love and fame to nothingness do sink. So, packed into these 14 lines, a single sentence, we have Keats's major themes, his writing, his dreaming, his love, and in a sense his also his desire for fame. But we also have an experiment in form. He's moving into writing a Shakespearean sonnet, all a single sentence. Not many of Shakespeare's sonnets are like that, but one or two are. And within the sonnet we have the movement from himself to another creature, another person, and then onto the most general and difficult and abstract ideas that any of us might have to think about. Love, loneliness, fame, nothingness. Allied with that, the sentence structure brings to this sonnet an extraordinary energy, a drive. And this is something that we often forget about with Keats. He can sometimes seem a little bit dreamy. But in reality, many of his poems have this forcefulness. Keats himself, when he was a child or a young man, was known as pretty ready to have a fight with people. You know, he's a man of energy and passion and vigour. And that vigour and energy and passion comes across very, very strongly in these 14 lines. It's a great poem. It's possibly not one that you're going to use in your coursework. And before you finish thinking about Keats for today, you might like to reread the sonnet on page 10 of your text on first looking into Chapman's Homer and see if you can see any similarities between the two sonnets. For example, you might look at the structure. The structure of that sonnet is quite different. But the two sonnets taken together reveal many of Keats's primary concerns, certainly in his early poetry. But those concerns remain throughout the later period too. And we see them developed and perhaps resolved in the odes and the Hyperion poems.